Welcome to Take Care, a weekly conversation on health and wellness, produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And I'm Linda Lowen. Poisonings, car crashes, falls, drowning, choking, fires. Each of these can lead to death. And what's most heartbreaking of all is that these are preventable deaths. What we call accidents are often situations that could be avoided if we only took the time to evaluate our habits and reduce our risk. According to the National Safety Council, someone dies every 4 minutes in the U.S. because of something we know how to prevent.
Joining us is Deborah Herzman, President and Chief Executive Officer of the National Safety Council, a nonprofit organization chartered by Congress with the mission of eliminating preventable deaths in our lifetime. The National Safety Council recently wrapped up a year-long project that culminated in the publication The State of Safety, a state-by-state report, which gives letter grades to every state based on their legislation and safety policies.
Welcome to Take Care, and thank you for discussing this important topic with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
The National Safety Council has gone on record as saying states aren't doing enough to improve safety on the roads, in the workplace, or in the home, the three areas of greatest concern. So let's begin with the concept of a preventable death. How do you define it?
Preventable deaths are really collected as things called unintentional injuries in the CDC or Centers for Disease Control Statistics, things like falls, drowning, choking, motor vehicle crashes, all of these are considered unintentional injury deaths. And so these are things that we know are preventable. And in fact, we see 146,000 fatalities each year in the United States and 40.6 million serious injuries. And so while people very often are complacent about these things that we do every day, they are the things that are most likely to result in a hospital visit.
Let's go over that list again of the most common types of accidents that can be avoided.
Sure. So when we look at big categories of fatalities, there are three areas, and we see these across all states in every community. Motor vehicle crashes on the roadway, so 40,000 fatalities every year. Again, these are 100% preventable. In the home and communities, we see things like falls. We all know that older adult falls can be very significant, but we also see falls in workplaces. So they affect people of all ages, but certainly older adults, leading cause of unintentional injury death is falls. And then when we look at middle age, there's been a lot of conversation about the President's Opioid Commission, and that's because this is an epidemic that's sweeping our country. We are seeing opioid overdoses on the rise. They're increasing every year. And in fact, we prescribe enough painkillers to give every man, woman, and child in this country a month's prescription. And so we're seeing more overdoses that are unintentional and fatalities as a result of those prescription painkillers.
I want to go back to the State of the Safety report that you did. And you had a state-by-state report, and it was interesting. No state was awarded an A in your report, but 11 states got an F. And I just want you to give us a few details of how you got to these findings. 7 states in the District of Columbia got a B. What did those states that got the highest grade get right?
Yeah, so what we saw across the board, Maryland actually achieved the highest overall grade, followed by Illinois, the District of Columbia, Maine, and Oregon. So those were our top 5 states. They really actually did a good job in all 3 areas. But I will say it's pretty balanced for Maryland. They got a 72% rating in road safety, and that really addresses everything from seatbelts in cars to making sure that you aren't leaving children alone and unattended in hot cars, and also addressing highway safety things, drunk driving crashes, distracted driving. Home and community, again, we look at those issues with respect to safety in the home. Fire safety, making sure that people have smoke detectors and fire detection suppression systems, choking, first aid, firearm safety, and falls and poisonings that we discussed earlier. And then the third category that we looked at was workplace safety. And so this is really looking at how to keep people safe on the job. There are a number of different ways to do this: prevention, preparedness and enforcement, good workers' comp programs, and having health and well-being programs for employees. And so we really looked at a comprehensive look of the state of safety in the United States and state by state, and we looked specifically at what states can do through laws and regulations to encourage safer behavior and safer action on the job, in homes and communities, and on the road.
So you didn't just analyze data of how many fatalities there were in any one area. You looked at what efforts states are intentionally making to cut down on these preventable deaths. Just give us a few examples of the types of programs that have been put in place. You talk about Maryland being at the top of your list. Give us an idea of what they are doing that maybe one of the states that got an F are not doing.
For Maryland, what we saw is that they had really strong laws with respect to highway safety, where some states may not. And so if you contrast Maryland on alcohol-impaired driving, they had laws for sobriety checkpoint programs or ignition interlocks required for first-time or repeat DUI offenders. They may have had an administrative license revocation for drivers who refused to be tested for drug or alcohol stops, and then open container bans. So these are some of the things that the best states do with respect to alcohol-impaired driving. And some of the worst states, for example, Michigan and Montana, only had one or none of those efforts in place. And what we saw for states like Maryland, they had three or four indicators in place. If we were looking at four things, they had, you know, three or four, and they're getting a better score. We did the same thing for every area across the board. We looked at things like sports-related concussions for children. We wanted to make sure that states had legislation about return-to-play laws, making sure that they're looking at the kids to diagnose whether they've had a concussion and not allowing them to play. Again, some states have two out of two indicators in place. Maryland, again, was one of those states that was doing what we were looking for as far as best practices. So in all of these areas, what can we prevent with respect to concussions? Every 3 minutes, a child in the U.S. is treated for a sports-related concussion. So we know there's more that we can do. We don't want to see these states that are not doing any of these activities. And this report is really intended to be a conversation starter to encourage legislators to look across the board. What are best practices, and what should they be doing in their home state to make their citizens safer?
If you're just joining us, you're listening to Take Care, a conversation on health and wellness produced by WRVO Public Media. I'm Linda Lowen.
And I'm Lorraine Rapp.
And our guest today is Deborah Hersman. She's President and Chief Executive Officer of the National Safety Council. The National Safety Council recently wrapped up a year-long project that culminated in the publication The State of Safety, a state-by-state report, which gives letter grades to every state based on their legislation and safety policies. And that's what we've been discussing. Debbie, when you looked at the states, you mentioned that the top five were the most safe states: Maryland, Illinois, District of Columbia, Maine, and Oregon. Where do you find that the push for greater safety comes from? I mean, I think about special interest groups like MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, or other entities. Is it coming from a grassroots effort? Are legislators being elected to office because they carry the torch for one topic or another? Where is this change for safety coming from? And is this what is lacking in the states that you say got the letter F grade?
Yeah, so I'd say, you know, sometimes the push for safety comes from very different quarters. You may see family members or survivors of something really advocate for a change in law. You mentioned MAD, but certainly we see with that with distracted driving. We see it with things like drownings or choking. Some states actually are teaching all of their high school graduates, in order to graduate, they're teaching them basic first aid and CPR course. That is something that's really important and can help people when we look at home and community safety to make sure that they have those skills that they need throughout the course of their life to help save someone in the event of a preventable death. And so There's always more that we can do, and I think some legislators, they may have a medical background, they may be ER doctors or nurses, they may have been paramedics, they may have seen some of the demand for some of these things. They could have come from law enforcement and seen way too many motor vehicle crashes, and so they have a passion in that space. And when it comes to workplaces, some of the best advocates for good laws are companies, are businesses that are doing a good job, and they may want to make sure that they raise the bar on safety across the board. And so when we look at things in states, what states can do, just think about a 911 system. And if you work on a big plant that has multiple buildings, work at a big facility, where do the emergency responders go when a 911 call comes in? Yes, they might go to the plant gate, but you want to make sure they get to the right building and the right office when they arrive. And so there's lots of things that we can do to create a safer world, whether it's where we play or where we live or where we work. And some of the legislators and some of the state agencies that are advancing some of these initiatives, it starts at the grassroots, but it also starts with data. And it starts with policies that recognize that some of these things can be very costly. Having a drug-free workplace law or a smoke-free workplace law can be very beneficial when it comes to costs as well.
Yes, I was going to follow up and ask you exactly that question. I'm sure that legislators would, you know, 10 out of 10 sign up for all of safety measures that you might recommend, because it does seem like a good thing, and I can't imagine anybody would object to that. But resources are needed, funding, education, etc. So how does that become a priority, and where do those resources come from?
You raise a fantastic point, because there's probably no one who would be opposed to greater safety, but you do have to take some steps to make sure that you can make a difference. And so, for example, in drowning, some of the things that we looked at for drownings were high school graduates being required to know CPR, regulations that require barriers to be installed around residential pools. So you're certainly going to have some funding if you are going to have someone be an instructor for all high school graduates. You're going to have to make a commitment to that at the local or at the state level if you're going to do that. But the regulations that require barriers to be installed around residential pools, that's probably going to be a cost that's going to be borne by homeowners. But probably many prudent homeowners would say, I want to put a fence around my pool because I don't want anyone in the neighborhood to lose a child or have someone fall in and drown. And so the costs are going to be borne in different ways. And so sometimes they may be a result of what happens at the state level, but it also some of it may flow down to a smaller jurisdiction or even a individual responsibility.
There are some things that individuals can do that in some states are mandated by law. I mean, I think about buckling your seatbelt. That's free. It comes in the car. Other states mandate motorcycle helmets being worn, and that's $100 or more investment, but that obviously saves lives. But what do you say to people who say, I don't want to be told to buckle my seatbelt. I don't want to be told to wear a motorcycle helmet. I don't want to live in a nanny state.
So we do hear that a lot, and I've worked in safety advocacy for many years, and I will say that that's a refrain that we do hear a lot is don't tell me what I need to do. And I think that the challenge there is when we recognize that some of the costs actually are not just borne by the individual. And so while there may be a crash that involves an individual who isn't wearing a helmet or not wearing a seatbelt, the consequences of those crashes actually are borne not just by those individuals, but by the rest of us. Medical costs and expenses, insurance. I mean, you get to a point where some of those costs are not going to be borne by the individual. You reach catastrophic caps, and Medicaid begins to pick those things up. We actually have evidence of costs actually encouraging a state to change their laws. Louisiana repealed their helmet law, but then once they saw how much it was costing them, how much it was costing the state and the taxpayers, once the helmet law was repealed, they actually reinstated it. And so some of these issues can be very controversial. Of course, people have different opinions. They have different feelings about things. But as a society, One of the things that we look at is for the laws and the regulations to guide us to best practices and to let us know what the appropriate behavior is. And that's how things have changed with respect to the restraint of our children. When I grew up, we didn't have child seats. Now all 50 states have laws that require that children be properly restrained in a size-appropriate restraint, because seatbelts are made for adults, not for children. And so car seats are ubiquitous in society now, but they weren't when I grew up.
Deborah Herzman is President and Chief Executive Officer of the National Safety Council. Thank you so much for coming on Take Care.
Thank you. Have a safe day.